I want to start off our discussion this morning bringing in a couple of examples from history. And I think as we develop our thoughts this morning, you'll see how these are germane to our discussion. The first I want to talk about is the Battle of Stalingrad. This is in about 1942. Hitler decides he wants to attack the Russians. He begins to attack the Russians on the Eastern Front. His main objective is a small town, but a very important town called Caucasus. I'm sure I mispronounced that. But the importance of this is it was a refinery town, had lots of oil, minerals, things like that, things that Hitler needed to continue his war efforts throughout Europe. Well, as he easily takes most of the Eastern Front and this small town, he realizes that Stalingrad is on his flank. He says, well, I'm going to send some part of my army over there to secure them so that I'm not outflanked. So the mistake he made, though, is he only sent infantry over there, thinking he could easily overtake the Russians. Well, he underestimated how tenacious the Russians were. He underestimated the winter that was involved with the Russians. And when he finally realized this, he sent his 4th Panzer Division over there, but by then it was too late. The Russians had organized. They ended up surrounding him completely, and Hitler loses the battle. Not only does he lose the battle, and he loses 330,000 men at this particular point in time, and also loses his primary objective, which was this refinery town. Our next example is even a little bit further back. This is about AD 217. This has to do with the Roman Empire and Hannibal and his elephants. Well, Hannibal, as he's terrorizing the top half, the northern part of Italy, the Roman Empire sends a gentleman by the name of Gaius Flaminius. I mispronounced that as well. But his job was to go up there and take care of Hannibal. And he was all but too eager to go do this. Was that as they approached this one place in northern Italy called Lake Tramonine, Flagus ends up catching up to Hannibal at this time. Well, what he doesn't realize is Hannibal allows his rear guard to stay behind, and he ends up ferrying his famous elephants and the rest of his army across this lake, and they hide in the hills waiting for Flaminius to come and engage his rear guard. Well, as soon as Flaminius sees that, he gets excited. He sends his whole army in to engage what he thinks is the whole army, but it's only the rear guard. And as he does, his armies become stretched out. Hannibal ends up crashing down upon him and defeating his entire army. He ends up losing almost 30,000 men. He himself is killed. Only about 5,000 got out alive. But because Flaminius ended up not taking just a little bit of time to scout the area to see where the rest of this army was, he allowed himself to be exposed and thus cost himself the whole battle. Now you may be wondering, why are we looking at history at all this? This may be fairly interesting if you're in history class, but what does this have to do with our discussion this morning? Well, if you look at the examples of these two men, and we could pick several others out, the critical mistake they made, they either lost sight of their primary objective or they didn't account of who or where their enemy was coming from at this particular time. You know, I sometimes think we don't have to look back at history to see the failings of people not knowing where their enemy is coming from. We have but to look to our own government, our own dysfunctional government, I might add. You know, we elect these people to go and represent us, to help us, protect us, and all they end up doing is playing politics and of their own agenda most of the time. This was probably no more prevalent than President Obama back in 2014. He was making a speech at the UN Council when he famously said, for all the immediately challenges that we had gathered to address this week, terrorism, instability, inequity, disease, there is one issue that will define the contours of this century more dramatically than any other, and that is the urgent and growing threat of changing climate. Now, keep in mind, this is about the time that ISIS has taken over northern Iraq. We have the Russians in Crimea, and we have shootings in this country, as well as terrorist plots in Europe. Yet, our politicians want to say our greatest threat are not these people, but the fact that it is getting warmer in August in the Deep South. Now, I don't want to pick on Obama. He is not the only politician that has made statements such as this. We could sit here for the rest of the day talking about things like this. But, you know, sometimes I wonder, with our constant 24-hour news cycle that has developed over the years and the endless articles that we can read, you know, on the internet, our Twitter, our Facebook page, I mean, we can't hardly get away from it. We have a president that tweets more than most of us in here do, you know? So there's almost no escaping it, and I think sometimes we become numb to the world around us because we want to shut it off. And I'm as guilty as that as anyone. I have all but stopped watching television, especially news, because it's rinse and repeat. I can watch it for 30 minutes, and I'll know what happened for the next 2 or 3 weeks because it's all the same news cycle. I'm afraid we get into this mindset, and we become numb to it, so we want to kind of like gather everybody in. We want to circle the wagons, as it were, and make sure that we are taking care of one another, which we should, but we want to look out for things within. And we end up focusing on each other so much that we tend to forget who our real enemy in this world is. And that's what I want to try and remind us of this morning, about who our true enemy is. You know, if we were to ask that question, we could probably start off by saying, you know, some people will actually answer that by saying, well, obviously, those who teach false doctrine are our enemy. Well, I would not disagree with that at all. We can find this in 2 Timothy 4:2, where it says, preach the word, be prepared in season and out of season, correct, rebuke, and encourage with every form of patient instruction. This is the NIV version. Well, in doing this, I think many times we're all over this verse, aren't we? We love to correct and rebuke. We've gotten pretty good at it over the years. But I want to call our attention to maybe even the last part of the verse, where it says, with every form of patient instruction. How often do we actually show patience when dealing with our brother who may have a different opinion than us or may not have been as learned as we are in a certain subject? At what cost do we actually pay when we rebuke and correct our brother? You know, one of the best examples of how to rebuke and correct with all patience that we can find in the Bible is the example of Aquila and Priscilla in their dealings with Apollos. If you remember, Apollos, there in Acts 18, 24 through 26, says, meanwhile, a Jew named Apollos, a native of Alexandria, came to Ephesus. He was a learned man with a thorough knowledge of the scriptures. He had been instructed in the way of the Lord, and he spoke with great fervor and taught about Jesus accurately. Though he knew only the baptism of John, he began to speak boldly in the synagogue. When Priscilla and Aquila heard him, they invited him to their home and explained to him the way of God more accurately. Do you see what they did? They didn't stand up in the middle of the synagogue and say, you're wrong. You're teaching wrong. They didn't send letters to other congregations say, watch out for this guy, Apollos. He's teaching something that is not accurate. They didn't write about him in some paper. They called him into their house, and they said, let's sit down and talk about this. And they were able to instruct him in a better way. You know, one of the worst things I think that has happened recently, and when I say recently, over the years, I guess before I want to start, that is to thank Brother Carl for presenting the lessons to us on what happened back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and some a little bit earlier, about the institutional question within the church. I think he's done a wonderful job, and he's done exactly what the elders have asked him to do, and that is to explain what happened so that hopefully we will not make that same mistake. But in studying this, you know, in myself and talking to my father about it and some other people, in my opinion, and this is my opinion, one of the biggest tragedies that happened within this institutional question was the division of the Lord's church and how different brethren treated each other during this time. At this particular time, men who had preached in congregations for years were suddenly fired the next Sunday because they did not agree with the congregation, the direction of the congregation. Some men were what they called quarantined. And what this was different congregations would write people up saying, do not hire these preachers, do not have them for meetings. You need to quarantine them because of what they believe or what they do not believe. You know, this pitted brother against brother, family member against family member. And I'm afraid we even have some of this today. But this is certainly not how the Lord's church is to act. We see this with Paul in 1 Corinthians 1:11. If you remember, the whole first chapter to the Corinthians is about unity. But this is where Paul says, my brothers and sisters, some from Chloe's household have informed me that there are quarrels among you. You know, contentions and divisions among the Lord's people just, you know, should not be. Sometimes I feel like when in our dealings with one another, we forget who our true enemy is. Our true enemy is not those who believe in God. Our true enemy is not those who believe that Jesus is the Son of God or believe that baptism is for the remission of our sins. Our true enemy is Satan. And that's what I want to focus on this morning. Well, 1 Peter 5 and 8 tells us that. It says, be alert and of sober mind. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. Notice what the script, what this one verse talks about. It calls out specifically as the devil being our enemy. But also notice how it talks about him prowling around like a lion. We can see this in the interaction with God and Job back in the first chapter of Job, when God asks Satan, where have you come from? Satan says, from roaming around throughout the earth, going back and forth on it. He's going back and forth on the earth. He's prowling around like a lion to see who he can devour. But also, it talks about in the very first part of the lesson, it says, be alert and be of sober mind. If we recall our lesson with Greg recently, where he talks about sobriety, where he talks about we need to be sober-minded. We need to always keep our minds focused and not get distracted on the things that we should be doing. I feel sometimes that with our discussions with one another, we forget who the true enemy is, and that is Satan. And we should never lose that fact. You know, sometimes I know Dan Cheney talked about us being joints and how we are stronger together. Well, we can only be joints if we are of one mind, if we are working together. And I think sometimes that we can forget how to be joints because we forget to be how to be sober-minded about things. We get too easily distracted about who the real enemy is. It is not each other. It is not the person sitting next to you. It is Satan. Well, sometimes we wonder, why do we have quarrels among brethren? We should be the happiest people and the friendliest people around. Well, James tells us this in James 4, 1 through 4. It says, what causes fight and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desire, the battle within you? You desire but do not have, so you kill. You covet, but you cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and fight. You do not have because you do not ask God, When you ask, you do not receive because you ask with wrong motives, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. You adulterous people, do you not know that friendship with the world means enmity with God? Therefore, anyone who chooses to be friends with the world becomes an enemy with God. So who is our enemy? It is Satan. It is this world. You know, and Satan has many tools at his disposal, many people that will follow him, minions, if you will. And I want to just look at a couple of examples quickly this morning, and we don't have to look very far with that. You know, in today's society, we can good has become bad, bad has become evil, right is wrong, and wrong is right. Well, Isaiah 5:20 tells us this. It says, woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Even back in Isaiah's day, this was going on at the time. And probably there's no better example of good for bad and getting and bad for good of a couple of examples I have read recently. And one of those is, and I really couldn't believe it when I first heard it on the news, so I had to go and read it. This was from an August report of CBSN, which is kind of an online thing for CBS News. And it talks about how Iceland, the small country of Iceland, was bragging about how they have essentially eradicated Down syndrome through the use of abortion. The article goes on to say that since parental screening tests were introduced in Iceland in the early 2000s, vast majority of women, close to 100% who had received a positive test for Down syndrome, terminated their pregnancies. So they're bragging on themselves that they have eradicated Down syndrome through abortion. You know, this is pretty much what Hitler did in World War II. Part of his grand plan was to have the Aryan race, the dominant race. So what did he do? He killed off all the Jews, the gypsies, the maimed, the weak. And we chastise him for that, and rightfully so. But yet, we have this going on in our world today. And you know, sometimes people even make allies with the strangest people, because we don't have to go outside of the U.S. to find this type of attitude. It's the old adage of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. There's probably no greater example than this from Missouri. This was dated September 13th, 2017, where it stated that Missouri has reportedly doubled its abortion capacity this year, thanks to the Satanic Temple and Planned Parenthood, who have worked in tandem to fight for the state's restrictions on abortions. Now, we all know about Planned Parenthood. We've read the articles and things like that, but they have actually, and this is a government-sponsored or government-approved entity, but they have teamed up with the Satanic Temple to promote their cause. This is who we are fighting. And of course, we don't even have to look at our own society for these type of examples. You know, we can look at our government, how our governments oppress Christianity and oppress us. I mean, China's been doing this for years. There have been reports of people having to meet in the woods out under a tree so that they could stay away from the government. And of course, we won't even get into the Arabic nations who drag people out of their homes and ask them if they're Christians. And if they say yes, they're immediately executed. But unfortunately, we don't even have to look to foreign countries to see persecution coming to us. There's probably no greater example than that of the Fort Des Moines Church of Christ up in Des Moines, Iowa. What had happened is the church, part of their motto, very similar to us. I don't know much about this church, actually probably nothing at all. It was more of the article. But because the church was welcoming, because the church invited all types of people in, it didn't matter, and I think we would do pretty much the same. The Iowa Civil Rights Commission took the position that the state's laws require this church to censor its speech against homosexuality and to make its bathrooms co-ed so they can be male or female. So this is the first time in our nation's history that we actually had a state entity trying to come in and tell a church what they could not preach about and what standards that they were going to adhere to. And of course, fortunately, this was overturned through the Alliance Defending Freedom's attorney. And so it did have a happy ending. But the mere fact that even this country has this type of activity going on should certainly give us pause. And I won't even get on my soapbox about schools and universities. That would take way too long about that. But if you don't know what's going on in your public schools or universities, all you have to do is read your child's homework and check into it. Even though we've discussed some earthly examples this morning, we need to always remember that our struggle is not of this earth. Ephesians 6:12 tells us this, "For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic powers over the present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places." We're not fighting men. We're fighting things from the heavenly places. And of course, 2 Corinthians 10:3 and 4 tells us, "For though we do not live in this world, we do not wage war as this world does. The weapons we fight are not the weapons of the world." Living in this world as a Christian is not easy. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of faith. It takes a whole lot of hope. But mainly it takes love. We are told this in 1 Corinthians 13:13. It says, "So now faith, hope, and love abide, these three things, but the greatest of these is love." That love comes in the form of our love for God, our love for one another, our love for our fellow man is what will help us with the struggle against our true enemy, that is Satan in this world. And that is my main objective here this morning, for us to never forget that, to never forget that our enemy is not one another, our enemy is Satan. I know Brandon said he looked through my slides this morning, he said there's some pretty disturbing stuff, and we have talked about some pretty bad stuff this morning. So I want to leave us on a good note, or do my best to leave us on a good note. Even though we fight with visible and invisible forces against us, God has given us our own weapons to fight against us. Here is Ephesians 6:11-18. He gives us this armor that we have. And I won't take time for time restraints to read all of this, but he has given this to us. Each one of his children, he has given this to us. You know, and as I read about taking up the whole armor of God, that we can withstand the evil day and having done all to stand firm, and talks about the breastplate of righteousness, putting on our shoes for your feet and having the readiness of the gospel, and taking up the shield of faith. When I read that, I'm not sure what mental picture you get in your mind. But I think of something like this: a knight in shining armor, ready to go into battle, you know, looking forward to it. Well, sometimes I wonder, is this what God really wants? Is this what God wants me to look like when I stand before him? Nice and pristine, you know, looks like I just stepped off the showroom floor. Or does he want me to look something like this, where our armor has been tested? You know, I sometimes wonder if he wants to see us, our helmet rusted, our shield dented up, our sword chipped up, you know, breastplate with some holes in it. He wants to see it used. He doesn't want to see it bright and shining standing before it. He wants to know that I have been out there withstanding the devil and that my armor that he has given me has shown this. You know, but the best message of all that I can leave with us today is that it's not going to be up to me or you or what condition my armor may or may not be in. Because this battle's already been decided. And the good news is God is going to win. We can look at Revelations. It talks about that. I think Frank Walton, who used to preach here, probably had one of the best summaries of the book of Revelations. He said, if you understand the book of Revelations, it comes down to God and the devil getting a fight, and God wins. There's a lot more to the book of Revelations than that, but that's probably the underlying theme. And how wonderful it is to know that even though we have all these bad things within this world that are coming our way, that we are on the winning side, that we are on the side that is going to win this battle. And do you know how I know that he's going to take care of me? You know, have you ever been on a team before? And I'll throw in football seasons. We've got to throw in one sports analogy, I guess. You ever been on a team? Doesn't matter. Football, baseball, basketball, track and field. Doesn't matter. That when you stepped on the field, you know you were going to win. You knew it. No doubt in your mind. You know, that never happened to me a whole lot in my career, but it was a good feeling. Well, that's the feeling that we should have throughout our existence on this world, that we are on the winning side and God is with us. And do you know how I know God is with us? Brent almost stole my thunder this morning in class when he quoted Hebrews 13:5. God has made a promise. God keeps his promises. He said, I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. If there's one promise that we can count on, it's this right here. But you know, that promise is only for those who are part of his household, who are part of his family. It is for those who've actually, he has given this armor to protect themselves from. You know, we spoke a little bit earlier about how the devil prowls around like a lion seeking whom he may devour. Well, if you've ever watched any of these nature shows, as it were, if you know how animals like lions hunt, they don't attack a whole herd. They don't attack a group of whatever they're hunting. They typically look for the weakest, the smallest, the slowest, the one that's separated from the herd. Well, I will suggest this morning that if you have not obeyed Christ and you have not been accepted into his fold, that you're out there alone. You do not have this armor to protect you. And you're easier prey for Satan than having a group of people around you that can help you withstand the temptations of the evil one at this time. I know there's people here this morning that need the invitation of Christ. Well, it's being extended right now. We've talked about a lot of things this morning, but the one you need to take away right now is if you have not been baptized into the Lord, you do not have this type of protection. You don't have the protection of your fellow brothers and sisters to help you through and fight this battle. But you can. All you have to do is come down this morning. You have to confess your sins. You have to confess that Jesus Christ is his son. And then you can be baptized and washed away. And when you come up, you will have this armor. And not just this armor, you'll have the armor of this whole congregation to go with you.